Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Babe. I'm your host, Lara Marie Shane Halls, and I'm here today with a fellow babe, writer, director, Brittany Poulton. Did I say that right?
Yes. No,
Britt you did. Poulton.
Britt Poulton.
Poulton.
Some people throw an S in the Poulton, which I've always thought Poulton's? Was pretty wild. No. Poulson.
No.
They drop the T and they add an S, and that's been the troll of my life, is being called Britt Poulson.
Why would anyone in their right mind do that?
It's a great question, and it's still I truly don't know. I think because Poulson is a more, I guess, common last name than Poulton.
I guess.
I truly.
I just think of Sarah Paulson.
Right.
But that's right. Not Poul.
Hey, you know, I would like Britt Paulson.
Yeah,
I'd take
Paulson
that for sure.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the Laura, your version of like a Laura.
Right,
Lara
right,
troll.
Right.
Yeah.
Laura.
It's like.
There's no
you're
you.
Insane if you say that.
I know.
Like, I'll take Mara over Laura.
Mara,
which I get a lot.
That's the lead character in my movie. Mara.
Oh,
it's such an unusual name. I'm surprised you even know. I've never met a Mara.
I don't.
Besides
I've
the
met
one
some
I made
Moras,
up.
But
Mora,
not
yes.
Maras.
Mara's a beautiful name. It's a biblical name.
What does it mean?
That's a great question. I probably knew way back
when
I
you
wrote the script.
Yeah.
Because name and like the history of a name and all of that is always really important to me when I'm naming my characters. It's one of my favorite parts. It's mm-hmm. like the first, I guess, big step in creating their identity is naming them.
Yeah. I love name research.
I love it. I love it. And so we settled on Mara. She's like from a religious community, but it wasn't your typical, it wasn't Sarah or Rebecca or these typical biblical names, but I can't remember what it means. I'm gonna have to find out.
Yeah, it's weird to think that like Sarah and Rebecca are biblical names because they sound very modern.
Yeah, well, everyone names Sarah.
Everyone yeah. named Sarah is like from the Bible.
Right, exactly.
Wait, okay, let's talk about your movie because we're just like organically okay. speaking on it.
Okay.
So Britt co-wrote and co-directed a movie called Them That Follow that's out in 2 weeks.
Yes.
On August 2nd.
Yes, it is out in LA, New York on August 2nd. And then we will spread across the nation and come to a theater near you on August 8th. And so we'll be in all major cities thereafter. And yeah, it's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah. So you've probably, if you've been to the movies recently, and especially what trailer, it played before a bunch of movies
yes,
that I've seen recently.
We
your
got
trailer
played
did.
Before Midsommar,
oh,
which
yeah,
I was
that
delighted.
Was really chic.
I think it's definitely a similar audience. The movies couldn't be more different, but I think people that liked Midsommar will enjoy our film.
Mm-hmm.
It's
adjacent in its own
adjacent.
Way. It's about like creepy white people.
It's about it's about problematic white people. No, I think that it explores some of the same themes in terms of what it means to I guess grow up and exist in a secluded community, of a community that's apart from mainstream society, and how religion and the shape and how religion shapes our identity and all of these things and navigating that. That's where the similarities would really stop, I would say. Midsommar, I would love to talk about that. That's a doozy. Our film is actually a pretty sincere exploration of Appalachian Pentecostal snake handlers. For those of your readers who don't know about snake handling, it is a centuries-old religious practice born in Appalachia. It came out of the Great Revival and the Holiness and Pentecostal movement in the early 20th century. It really was an escalation of Pentecostalism, which for people that don't know, and I certainly didn't, I grew up Mormon. The way Pentecostal people practice their worship is very ecstatic. It's very out loud.
Speaking in tongues. And
yeah, they speak in tongues.
Falling on the floor.
They faith healing.
They're
it's
like
very,
high drama yeah,
it's,
worship.
It's exuberant. Yeah. And it is high drama. Nothing is interior. They like excise the demons with each other out loud.
Yeah. The highs are highs and the lows are lows.
Yes. Yes.
It's extremely like bipolar worship.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, there are so many jokes people could make, but it really is a incredible experience to go to one of those churches and be with them as they connect with the divine. And for someone that doesn't believe in God, like myself, that was a sort of pivotal moment when we were doing research and humbling, where I was just like, wow, like, who am I to say that God doesn't exist? Like, I just watched somebody speak to God, their God, and it exists to them. And it was really, it's really special. The way they practice their faith is really special. And I have so much respect for them.
Yeah. And the energy in the room, I'm sure, is like, you feel it.
Yes.
It's not like they're just making it up and like pretending.
No, it's completely sincere. It's real to them. And it's infectious. Like, you want to get up and move your body as well.
Yeah.
And powerful. I really understood why people would go there every week. The catharsis that you would get by doing that period and by doing it with your community. It's really something to behold.
Yeah.
And snake handling is an escalation of that. So I could go into the
just like taking
of
it to the next. It's taking all of the Pentecostal worship to the next level.
Yeah. So it's
and bringing a snake into the mix.
Bringing a snake into the mix. So they
yeah.
Are
give me some history.
Yeah. Okay. Some history.
Because now I'm like,
okay,
who was like, you know what? It's not enough that we're speaking in tongues. We're falling on the floor. We're faith healing.
Yes.
And it was like creating a buzz in the room.
Yes.
I think what we really need to really up the stakes are some snakes. And then other people were like, yes, you're
his
so
his name
right.
was George Hensley.
Okay.
So he's actually a person. But he was a preacher and a former bootlegger and this sort of interesting character. But he took a passage from the book of Mark that speaks about taking up serpents and drinking deadly things, meaning poison, and how for believers that can't hurt you. And so he used that as his rationale for taking up snakes. And he argued that the word serpent in the Bible refers only to venomous snakes. And so he started handling rattlesnakes in his church service. And during the time in the United States, and especially in Appalachia, this sort of evangelizing and this exuberant faith practice was just catching on like wildfire. So him taking snakes into it just upped the ante.
Yeah.
And so
that's really going to make a splash.
It attracted believers. It attracted skeptics. And snake handling churches started popping up all over Appalachia. And it wasn't until the 50s that they had to really go underground because all the pastors were dying. And I think the New York Times reported in the 50s that it was almost like 35 people had been reported to have died by snake bite. And that's just what they've recorded.
Yeah.
So they presume many more than that. And so all the states in Appalachia, with the exception of West Virginia, outlawed and banned this practice, which
I love West Virginia. Yeah. You got to give it to them.
Out.
Yeah. They love just like a real snake moment like that.
Yeah. It's true.
They're like meth, snakes, moonshine, trailer parks, racism. We got it all.
Yeah.
An old WV.
In West Virginia.
Yeah.
So they went into hiding, and where they've largely remained since, with a few exceptions of young pastors like doing reality shows and having Facebook pages and things like that. But the church I consulted with, they were founded in 1916, and they're still very, very reclusive and didn't want like anyone from our production going. They were very generous and thoughtful in answering questions. And, you know, I I'm curious to see what they'll think of the film. But they said they wouldn't sanction the film until they saw it, which is...
They haven't seen it yet?
No.
I'm so curious, too.
I know, because you know what? It's a work of fiction. And even though we're not depicting any of them with bias, and that was really important to me, you know, it's a work of fiction. And so some of the characters, they're all different shades of, you know, good and bad. But I hope that they I hope that they are not offended. I would be so sad.
The good news is that they're like so like the chances of them coming after you are like very slim.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
What happened to George Hensley?
Oh, he died by snake bite.
Love that for him.
When he was about 72 in Florida.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. But he had been bitten like many times. I mean, he's sort of legendary, so I don't know what's accurate and what's not, but he had been bitten and survived many, many times, as many pastors are bitten and survive
by rattlesnakes.
Yes.
And because all you need is like the antidote in time.
Oh, but they don't use the antivenom.
Oh, they so just like ride it out.
Part of Pentecostalism and certainly snake handling communities, they frown on Western medicine. They believe in faith healing. That's healing only by your faith in God. So okay. Not going to the hospital. Some still do, but most pastors opt to stay at home and wait it out.
Yeah.
And pray. And the community, which you'll see in my film, holds vigil, basically.
Yeah.
Where the person who's bit goes through, you know, a dark night of the soul, trying to maintain their faith while the venom takes hold. And they either live or they don't.
So he lived through multiple snake bites. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So does he, then would his community believe like his faith just wasn't strong enough at like 72? Or how do they justify, like the final act?
That's a good question.
They're just like, it was his time.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
God called him home. praise. Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I've never read anywhere where they revere their pastor so much, so I would be surprised if they were like, well, you know?
They're just like...
yeah.
Like, so, they wouldn't doubt his faith.
No, I don't think so.
But they're just like, oh, he got old, and the old ticker couldn't...
I think that they probably just think that it was his time.
Yeah.
You know?
I love how, like, selective... Mm-hmm. Certain religions are about that kind of thing.
All of them,
for the most part. But like, we're just like, it all applies until I hit like a wall that I can't really explain. Yeah. And then it's just like, shrug.
Whale.
Like, you figure it out. Whale.
Whale.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Then it's not even an I don't know. It's just like, Jesus provides or something like that.
Yeah.
Like
he has platitude. A plan.
Yeah. Wait, so you grew up Mormon?
I grew up Mormon, yes.
In Utah?
Yes, mostly.
Mostly in Utah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
I feel
like we've never super talked about it.
We haven't talked about it. I feel like I know so much about your journey because I'm such a super fan.
You're a babe head.
I'm a big babe head. I don't think I've ever missed an episode. Yeah, so my family's from Southern Idaho, where I was born. And small Mormon town, predominantly Mormon. I don't think there's any other churches there. And when I was young, my dad moved to Southern Utah, to Winchester Hills, and that's where I moved with him. And on my mom's side, they're all really fucking Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all my uncles were bishops or are bishops. Most of my cousins went on missions. Both my brothers went on missions. And Yeah. So it was, and being in Utah, whether you're Mormon or not, it's a Mormon culture. And so it's just the world that you're living in is Mormon, and everything comes from that. Like all the, it, like your cultural practices, everything is like Mormon. And so I think,
how Mormon are we talking? Like super Mormon, or there's shades of Mormonism?
There are for sure shades, I'm sure. And I think it depends on like your family. And I think all families have like different like quirks and things that they probably enforce or don't enforce. But like in Utah growing up, like I like never saw an adult drink coffee before, you know, like, mm-hmm. So even if you're not super Mormon, it's such a taboo. I mean, let alone drinking wine or anything like that, but no drinking coffee, no drinking alcohol, like all of these things are like bad.
Yeah.
Trashy.
Bad. No cigarettes.
Oh, no.
It's only you put like good things into
right,
your body.
Right. They have something.
What about sugar? Are they like weird about sugar?
So I have relatives that are very, like pious Mormons, mm-hmm. and they live without very many material things. And there's a decent sized Mormon subculture that I think reflect how my cousins live. But they, for example, won't touch won't eat white flour. So everything's like whole grain, everything. They make their own bread. Everything's like no refined sugar.
It's
no,
like Justa.
It's like, it's very, very healthy and like things that are like show up in the Bible.
Yeah.
Basically. But that's unusual. Mainstream Mormon culture, you know, they probably eat what every other, you know, red state eats. Mm-hmm. Although they love, they have some like favorite restaurants that are like, when I see them, it's like, you can, if you go inside like a Jimmy John's or they love Jimmy John's.
Mormons love Jimmy John's. Why do they love Jimmy John's?
I mean, those sandwiches are pretty good. Their tuna salad sandwich is like the best in the biz. I have no idea. And they love Cafe Rio. Do you guys have these out here? It's a,
I feel like
it's
I
like
mean,
a Mexican, it's like a made to order Mexican restaurant.
Like not a Tex-Mex made to order or more like.
No, it's like not as fresh as Chipotle. It's like Chipotle, but better. And I don't know if that's the Mormon girl in me, but it's like those tortillas are amazing. But if you go into like a Cafe Rio, it's just like Mormon families lined up.
Mormons love a fast casual.
They love a fast casual where they can bring all their kids and just line them up. But yeah, I'm like totally. What was your question? What was it like? Oh, it was hard.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It was hard. And I wasn't very Mormon. And my dad wasn't Mormon. He is, you know, vague Christian. He believes in the Bible. But he was never too big on any institutionalized religion. But he did become a Baptist for a while. And so I went to Baptist churches with him, mm-hmm. and saw a different side of Christianity. And I think my interest in Christianity and like the moment where I felt like acutely oppressed by it was when I turned 8. So in the Mormon religion, you have to
baptized.
Get baptized.
Yeah.
And so the folks on my dad's side, specifically my aunt and her daughter, did not want me to get baptized in the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like an 8-year-old child and I'm like, mom, like maybe I shouldn't get baptized. And my mom's like, you're getting baptized. You know, she's been Mormon for like her family's Mormon since Mormonism existed. Like
yeah.
generations. They came over with the pioneers.
Okay, wow.
And so I didn't know what to do. I felt like if I got baptized Mormon, then I would disappoint my dad's side of the family. And if I didn't, then I would disappoint my mom. And it was almost to my 9th birthday, which is really unheard of. When you turn 8, you get baptized. Mm-hmm. That I finally relented and got baptized in the Mormon church. My uncle baptized me. And then I went home because I lived with my dad.
And your parents were divorced?
Yeah. Oh, they, okay. Sorry. They divorced when I was a baby.
Oh, okay.
So I went home and I told my cousin, cousin Brandy, if you're out there, that I got baptized, and she forced me on my knees and made me beg God for forgiveness and made me ask Jesus into my heart. And it was the most terrifying, upsetting, shameful experience of my young life.
Baptists, they don't like much, but they certainly don't like Mormonism.
No, they hate Mormons.
They hate Mormons. They hate Mormons. I remember being told from a very young age, like, yeah, being aware of Mormonism and that it was bad.
Well, they, yeah, no, it's true. I had one friend in Utah, and her family was Lutheran, and she was going to a Lutheran camp, just a summer camp that sounded awesome. I had never done anything like that, and she invited me, and I asked my mom if I could go, and she was like, nope, they hate Mormons. And I was like, I'm just going to go like make friendship bracelets and sing songs in the woods. Yeah. I was like 10. And she was like, nope, can't be around Lutherans. They hate Mormons. Like, Mormons are very aware that they're the, like, I guess, ugly stepsister of Christianity. Mainstream Christians do not like Mormons.
Yeah. They get a bad rap.
Really?
They get like made fun of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think like all the negative stereotypes are very reinforced, and it, yeah, is one of those religions where you can just like shit on it,
yeah,
openly without any sort of like, yeah, repercussions, because, no, everyone's in agreement. They're like, Mormons are crazy.
I know.
But I think that people, there's probably a lot, yeah, of great Mormons out there.
There are.
TBD. Like, I don't know if I know any. No, you don't know any. Aside from you.
I'm not Mormon.
But you're not even Mormon. No. So it's like.
No. There are a lot of great Mormons out there. I always take issue with those sort of like negative stereotypes. I'm so happy to have like a pointed conversation about the, like, you know, problematic cultural and spiritual aspects of Mormonism, because they're so real, and something that if I had a therapist, I'd be working out.
Yeah.
You know,
but well, I can't imagine how confusing that would be to not only be like, when your parents are divorced and like not on the same page about, right, anything, it's
nothing,
like bad.
Yeah, it's
that
sucks.
It's not like conscious uncoupling.
No.
Like, and it creates a lot of confusion for a child.
Yeah.
And so to bounce back and forth between like these two extremist religious views,
yeah,
is like, how are you supposed to even come out of that believing, yeah, in God, because you can't do anything right? Like,
right,
you're going to hell one way or the other, depending, yeah, on who you ask.
No,
so it's like, no wonder you're kind,
true,
of like,
I was just like, it's a hard pass. They have a lot of commonalities, of course, mm-hmm, you know, like how gendered their communities are. And that was always something that was really hard for me, because I have an older brother and he was raised differently than I was. And he had more privileges and less responsibilities. And that's something that they definitely hold in common. And I think that I was born with a sort of questioning personality, a more explorative personality, I guess. You know, I really think that I would have gone on a journey no matter what. But if, mm-hmm, I had been born a boy, maybe not as soon, and maybe not as furiously, because it was so hard to be subservient in so many ways and to just be less than. And that's something that they both fuck with.
Yeah, they do very different ways.
Very different ways.
There's such,
yeah,
a similarity.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you grow up around people that had like multiple wives?
No. So mainstream Mormons, I know that's another great question.
That's another probably question you get a lot.
I do. Because people think like all Mormons are polygamous. And the answer is no, mainstream Mormons are polygamous, because Mormons outlawed polygamy generations ago. And so you can't do it. If you do it, you get excommunicated. But when they changed the law, basically, a lot of people that were like super down with polygamy created their own like offshoot.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the fundamentalists, basically, of Mormonism.
Okay.
And they have different communities. And each of those communities, I think, in large part, has their own sort of like charismatic leader that sort of defines their rules and their culture. I don't think that they have like an overarching like institution that sort of streamlines like their rules and their belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
But so they're very separate from mainstream Mormons. However, I grew up seeing them everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it was very normal to go into Walmart and see a polygamous family. And, you know, mainstream Mormons are pretty cruel to them, which I always marveled at them because they're so different. They wear traditional clothes. The women, you know, they can't show their skin. So they have like sort of prairie dresses on with pants underneath the prairie dresses.
Mm-hmm. And very Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Yes. But
also very like in fashion right now.
I
know.
I was like, actually, it's like I could see Christy Dawn doing a lot.
Yeah. Christy Dawn definitely has like everything's moved towards more of like Mormon dressage.
I think so. It's true.
Especially if you like live in California and go to like.
I mean, look what I'm wearing now.
I know. You're really doing like Mormon chic. This is the second kind of Mormonish dress that I've seen of yours. It's and like, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. These prairie dresses are like my muumuus. But yeah, so they look different. They do their hair differently. And so you can spot a polygamist, especially a polygamous woman from a mile away. But they would come into stores and there would be like, you know, four of the wives and all of their kids and the older daughters. You would look at them and sometimes you wouldn't be sure if they were a young wife or an older daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always really chilling to me.
Yeah. Because also in some of those, like the young girls get married off pretty early.
Yeah. Yep.
So mainstream Mormons
are
like, fuck you to these other Mormons.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't even go to like the same place of worship.
No.
Yeah, because they're in their own community.
Yeah, it's two separate worlds.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Mormons are mostly white people for the most part.
Yeah, I would say they're pretty white. Utah's pretty white. They've had missionaries go all over the world, you know, since I guess Mormonism existed. I'm not a super buff on Mormon history. So sorry, any like
my Mormon fan base is furious.
I know. I'm so sorry, guys. I just stopped going to church when I was like 10. And so I have like the knowledge of a 10-year-old.
You stopped in both churches.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No.
How were you able to do that? You just put your foot down?
Yeah. No. You know, you're a product of divorce and dysfunctional parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
but I still was like forced to go to church until I was like 15 or 16.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My parents they had a hard time. So I think they were too busy trying to survive and work and everything to parent for better or worse. And one of the better things is it's like, they didn't have the energy, I guess, to force me to go to church.
Yeah.
So I was sort of left to my own devices, which I'm happy about in the long run.
Yeah.
But maybe I would have enjoyed that. Maybe I would have liked that my parents cared about me so much that they thought I should go to church. I don't know. I was like a latchkey kid. You know, I was very much on my own, even at a young age.
So that's a weird transition from going from being like baptized and then like forced to like ask Jesus for forgiveness to like a year later. You're like, I don't even have to fuck with it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't exactly a year. I stopped going in middle school. So the baptism thing was when I was 8, but that was my aunt's daughter. So that wasn't my parents who did that to me. It was my dad's older sister who my dad worked for her husband. And so he moved. This was in Wyoming. Sorry to explain all of the I've lived like in every Mountain West state there is. But my dad.
You're a cowgirl.
I'm a cowgirl. Truly. But my dad worked for my aunt's husband's construction business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of had to follow their lead, and they were very Baptist, and so we had to go to their church with them during that time. But my dad would have never, neither one of my parents would have ever done what my cousin did.
Yeah.
Brandy is her name.
Classic
Brandy. Cousin Brandy.
Cousin Brandy is all about like.
Yeah. No, my parents would have never done that. Yeah. No, they would have never done that. I don't even know if they know about it. I don't even know if I ever told them.
Well, now you can start a lot of drama at family gatherings, Thanksgiving, Christmas. So wait, did you have like a rebellious teenage?
Yeah, we have similar stories, actually. I was very rebellious. I had a very like scorched earth mentality in high school, and I started doing drugs when I was like 14. Mm-hmm. I started doing coke before I had even drank alcohol.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So rock and roll.
So rock and roll.
It was easier to get.
Yeah.
So I went through a very destructive phase where I was definitely angry. I was definitely raging against my sort of like conservative home with my mom and all of that, but that's only part of it. I think that no matter what like religion or level of conservatism my mom embraced, because she's always been a true blue Mormon. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I had such a hard time was because my family was so unstable and dysfunctional, and so I think that I was just a teenager that wanted to, I don't think, I was just angry at them. I was angry at my parents for not being parents. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, fuck you. Like, I don't need anybody. And so I went hard for my high school years.
Yeah. I think when you're around that level of dysfunction, you either go inwards and become like overachiever,
right,
and find a way to like get attention through,
right,
that,
mm-hmm,
or you rebel and you're, mm-hmm, like, you self-parent in,
yes,
the best way that you can,
yeah,
which is a terrible way, and then you're just like, fuck you, I know exactly what I'm doing, like I'm living my life, and I'm just like, gonna get fucked up if I want to.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was too is certainly on my dad's side, there's this sort of like this sort of like Pulton mythology of like how strong we are, and you know, and like I remember like falling down when I was a kid and being like, oh, you don't cry because you're a Pulton, you know, and and I think that and of course that expectation is thrust upon my brother probably more than ever was on me, but that's probably why I wanted to meet that expectation, was because I wasn't held to the same standard that like my brother was, because he was like a man, mm-hmm, you know, and I was just like, I'm so tough, like, and that was a big it was like so stupid, like looking back, teenagers are so dumb, but
they're
so dumb. But I was like, I'm so hard, I'm so tough, like I wanted to be like the cool tough girl that could like, you know, drop acid before fourth period and be fucking fine,
mm-hmm,
and like I thought that was like, I was like proud of myself.
Why is it so such an achievement
to get
really fucked up and then go to school?
I loved
getting like,
I did,
faded,
yeah,
as fuck, and
yeah,
then like going to class.
Yeah, no,
which
exactly,
because
it's just like a big fuck you, and
yeah,
then also it's attention seeking to your friends, because you're like, whoa, like Laura, she's wild.
Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she doesn't give a fuck. And you're like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. You're like, no, I'm ruining my life and making terrible decisions.
But like, you
come back to haunt me decades
forever
from now. Yeah.
But you feel powerful, mm-hmm, in a way that I think that I never did growing up. And so I think that was a lot of it, was me wanting to feel powerful. And so, yeah. So I didn't graduate high school.
Really?
No, I did not.
Wait, you were dropping acid in high school and going to school? That, mm-hmm, is hard, because I didn't ever go. I was never like a tripping and going to school. Lots of my friends were, but I was like, I don't know about that. It's pretty wild.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Did you have like full blown like hallucinations at school?
No.
Or like, what were your acid trips at school like?
No, I would just like, I was chill. I would drop like a gel tab before, you know, class or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the worst, like the most fucked up I'd ever been, I just remember it was like a U.S. history class, it must have been, and the teacher didn't want to teach and they played Saving Private Ryan.
No.
And I remember, because like all I wore was like hoodies, like, and I remember just like put it like laying on my desk and putting the hoodie over my head and just being like, it was so, I was just like, they're gonna find him, right? And I was just so it was so dark. And I don't think that I dropped acid after that, I don't think. But like I would do bumps between classes,
yeah,
which is fine. You can totally I don't know, you don't have any 15-year-old readers, but you could totally function.
Yeah, the thing about like any sort of amphetamine,
yeah,
is that it's like actually probably makes it better to be like at school. You're like absorbing more.
Yeah,
like I did really well on a test the day that I like did meth before school.
I've never done meth.
I've done it just like that.
That's
I've done
hardcore.
Few times, like. With intent to do meth, and then I think just, I've like, done it a bunch by default just through like it's in other drugs, and okay, so like if you're right. fucking with ecstasy at all or like
right.
Molly, chances are you're also fucking with like a pretty hefty dose of meth.
Oh, then maybe I have done meth.
Yeah,
but
I think everyone
I didn't
is
know
like
about
the
it.
Real life hack is that like everyone has pretty much done meth.
The life hack.
So like don't get all on your high meth horse.
No,
with meth, me over here.
Meth and speed, I never did. It always scared me.
Yeah, it's freaky.
Yeah, it's
not fun.
Yeah, and I had a relative who went on a meth journey, and I think that was a good deterrent for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I came out of it when I was like, in terms of doing drugs, I quit doing drugs when I was 17 or 18. Other than like the occasional like Molly at a party or whatever, I got it out of my system at a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you were cognizant enough to be like, well, that's enough for me. Like,
you know, I guess I'm lucky I don't have an addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really lucky. But yeah, it all just got too dark. I ran with some like, you know, eventually ended up in some really scary situations that I'm really glad that I got out of. I'm really glad that they weren't like more horrific. I can't imagine my daughters putting themselves in those situations. It keeps me up at night.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it all got a little too dark and I was just like, this is not for me. And so I moved and started a new high school and like completely cut off all of my old friends. And that's the best way to do it, kids.
Yeah.
When you want to get clean, you just have to like literally drop a bomb, fake your death,
mm-hmm.
get the fuck out of there.
Leave. Disappear inexplicably.
Yes.
And then if you ever come back, people are really excited to see you.
Yeah.
And you get like a serotonin boost from everyone being like glad that you're back.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny because some of my crazier girlfriends during that time, they like then find you on Facebook so many years later. And it's so trippy for them to like, you know, comment on something you post, like, or whatever.
And
I'm like, girl, I used to like snort coke off your stomach. I was like, and now you're commenting on like my baby pictures. Like, we truly live in a simulation.
Yeah, the way that you can like get in touch with people from the past is like no one ever had to do that generations before us. It's like you
so
had the
weird.
Privilege of being able to just like forget about everyone.
Yeah, it's so weird. But I guess good. It's nice to see some the ones that made it out, like the one I'm talking about, Heather. she's like a nurse now and has two kids. And I'm like, I'm happy for her.
Yeah.
Gone the other way for some of my friends it did.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that go the other way. And even now, it's like I look for people from boarding school or even high school, people that I partied with.
Yeah.
And I feel like the biggest red flag is when they're not on any social media at all. Or like you can't find them anywhere.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, they're
probably gone.
Are they alive? I don't know what they're doing, but like it most likely isn't great.
Sad stuff.
Did you get your GED or like
yes,
how did
I did.
You?
Okay. Or my adult diploma. I think it's different than a GED. I went to continuation school my senior year, which I don't know if you have that in every state, but in California, my mom lived in California, so I moved back to California. Continuation school is like a halfway point between like regular high school and juvie.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it, when you go there, it's all the kids that have been either kicked out or dropped out of high school. And it's like a real, it's like, it's what I imagine. Like if you go to jail or whatever, you're just like around all the people that will get you back into crime. It's like, it's a bad place to be if you're trying to move, past like an old life. And so I was like, I can't be here. Like it made me sad. Like I didn't want, I didn't want to see myself reflected in them, which is a shitty thing to say, but that's how I felt when I was just trying to like get my diploma and like get out of there and like move on with my life. I was like, it makes me too sad that these are my peers, that like all of these like, you know, sad, angry kids doing drugs and who knows if they have a future and all these things that I was and at that time did not like in myself. It was really hard for me every day to see myself reflected in them. So I quit that and I ended up just doing like an outside project where the principal of that school gave me an or created a program where I got an adult diploma, but I didn't have to actually go to the school. It darked me out.
Yeah.
And that that person was really nice. It was, the school is called SELF, S-E-L-F, high school in Irvine, California. And there were some really nice teachers there, and they really did create a program for me to get that piece of paper, because I was like, I can't come here. It was too sad.
Wow, you're so like self-actualized at a young age.
Maybe.
To like know that about yourself,
right?
And maybe be able to like speak to what you want,
right?
And then get it.
Oh, I guess so. I've never thought about it that way. I always thought of it as like, I don't know, that I just like couldn't suck it up.
Classic Poulton fail.
Oh my God. You're right. Classic Poulton.
The shank, Poulton shank. Yeah. No, I'm like, you're like, I don't like this, but I need XYZ.
Yeah.
Can you do this for me? And people are like, yes, we will.
Yes, we will. Yeah. And they did. And so I got the piece of paper. And then I went through another dark period from 17 to 19. Where I went off the rails again, not with drugs, but with alcohol and just bad choices. And I didn't have like a home for a period. So I was just crashing with people. And I lived from Orange County to Utah to Santa Barbara on many different couches and just didn't have a direction. Because it was like I got my diploma, but I mean, I couldn't go to college. Like, I didn't even have, like, a GPA. You know, what do I do? And I like, took odd jobs here and there, and, like, everything sort of darked me out. Like, I tried working at a restaurant, and I was like, I'm not, like, I don't want to be a wait. Like, what is my life? And so I just ended up partying a lot and doing that whole thing over again, you know, and meeting dangerous boys.
Yeah.
And
it's such an easy thing to go back to because you know the drill.
Yeah.
Like, you know the drill of what it's like to just like get fucked up on drugs or like drink a ton. Like you'll be hungover. You'll eat like shit. You'll feel XYZ.
Right.
But at least you just know.
There's
not, and like it's within your control. And so you think.
Yeah. And you can create a little world for yourself with your friend group.
Yeah.
You know, where you find they're not holding you to any standards. Mm-mm. You know?
It's just like, let's get fucked up and have fun together.
Yeah. And so the life becomes, you know, getting enough money to just like get by and go out. Mm-hmm. And there's no bigger questions of like, okay, what do you want your life to be? Who are you? And so it was like, you know, hiding in a dark hole. But then, you know, I got into some big trouble and, I guess I'll tell you, I don't care. I got married in Vegas. So that was fun.
Just to like a rando?
No, he was my boyfriend at the time.
You eloped and got married in Vegas? I didn't know that.
Oh, really? So that was, yeah. So, you know, I was really...
Britney Spears of you. Britney Poulton Spears.
Oh, my God. It was just on like a total spontaneous road trip. We were driving past Vegas. We had gone snowboarding in southern Utah where... my dad lived, and we were driving back to California. My boyfriend lived in Santa Barbara, and one of my friends, Jennifer, was like, oh my God, wouldn't it be so funny if you guys got married?
Yes.
And he was like, sure. But he was so serious and sincere, and that's why I feel bad laughing about it, because he loved me so much as a, you know, bipolar, alcoholic, 22-year-old boy can love an 18-year-old girl.
That's a match made in married in Vegas heaven.
He did. And so we did it. I think I just wanted to see how it would feel.
Yeah.
As I think that's why we do a lot of things when we're that age.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I always wanted to like... And I think it still is like a fantasy of mine mm-hmm. to meet someone that it's like the connection's so intense, so yeah. fast that you're like, let's just get married and yeah. like just do it and not think about it yeah. and just both be like in at that level of commitment.
Yeah. And I think that it was like, oh, okay, I want to see what this would feel like for some sad reasons, for some dumb reasons, but... I think mostly because it's like at that age, you have this still romantic idea about like experience and adventure and like living your life. And I think part of me also did it for the like story, mm-hmm. you know, which is so dumb. But, you know, I think I wanted to see how I would feel.
How did you feel?
Regretful. I regretted it pretty immediately. And I began to feel a great sadness and a weight because he was very serious. And I did not feel that way about him, that he felt about me.
How long have you been dating?
We'd been dating like 6 months.
Okay.
And that's what made it real mm-hmm. was that he was in whatever little like fucked up you know little like relationship we were in, he was fully committed to it.
Yeah.
You know, and he adored me, and
he was like, score, I just like
yeah
won the lottery essentially.
Yeah. And that's
and you were like, lol, I just like got married in Vegas, haha.
Yeah. I just like fuck. it's terrible. And so yeah, that's like what made it real. And so that made me sad and regretful. But we still like kept dating. I never, and I didn't tell my parents, and I just sort of waited it out. And we were married for almost a year.
You didn't live together?
No. I was still just like living my like young, dumb life and going out. And like, he was just my boyfriend in my mind, but mm-hmm. we were like married.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that whole lifestyle like I finally like hit bottom in that lifestyle. And I was like, okay, I need to get out of this. And I did the same thing and I moved. So I moved back to Utah and like dumped all of my old friends and was like, I got to get out of here, guys. Like, this isn't who I am. This isn't who I want to be. Jennifer, who I brought up earlier.
Your bridesmaid. Yeah, your maid of honor.
My maid of honor. She like was so mad at me for leaving. She was like my partner in crime. And she fucking drove to Utah and ratted me out and told my dad that I was married and like things I had been doing.
Jennifer.
Yes. And so that's when like shit hit the fan. And I'm fortunate enough that my mom had a friend that helped me get an annulment.
Oh, that's nice. So you didn't have to get divorced. No. Not be like an 18-year-old divorcee.
Not a divorcee.
Even though that sounds really glamorous.
Yeah. And then from there, I was like, I need to rebuild my life. And so I went to community college and got straight A's. And then I transferred to Berkeley on a scholarship. And I graduated summa cum laude. So chic. Fuck yeah.
You had a really like Tara Westover-esque
I love that book.
Journey. Yeah. I'm reading it right now.
I mean, her life is more impressive than mine. Like, oh wow.
I can already tell. I'm already like impressed by her writing style, I'm just like, wow, you're a great writer. But I feel myself getting jealous of a lot of elements about her life and experience.
Yeah, I think with her, it's the book Educated. I don't know readers have read it. But she grew up in Southern Idaho. Mm-hmm. A lot of her culture mirrors my own, and I see a lot of my family in hers. But hers is more extreme. Her dad, they were really set apart. They had their own community. And even though her parents were Mormon, her dad had his own sort of, I guess, theological rationales. And they really had their own set of beliefs. And they were restricted from like mainstream society in a way that Mormons aren't. And so she grew up in a very small world, and for her to do what she's done, she was self-taught. They were all homeschooled, and she went to BYU eventually, did so well. Then she went to Oxford and Harvard, I think, and just kept going. For her to have done what she did, given how small and how many lies constructed her world, because of her family and her father, and the fact that she was able to like break out of that box, and build the life she's built is truly extraordinary.
Yeah.
Mine's so much messier. Mine's not as heroic.
Some people are just like, can get on an upward trajectory. Yeah. They like skyrocket off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
But I think the common experience is a lot more of like a jagged line graph, if you will.
Yeah. It's a great book.
Yeah, I'm in like the first like 50 pages.
Yeah, wait till she gets to her toxic older brother relationship, and then you'll have some more insight into my childhood.
Can't wait.
I'm like, I keep talking about my brother. A lot of unresolved stuff.
Are you guys close now?
No, we don't speak. No.
Brothers really know how to like fuck with your life.
Yeah, no, truly.
And siblings, because do you have two brothers?
I have two brothers. My older brother, he's a little over a year older than me, and we have the same parents. My younger brother, Brandon, he has a different dad, so he's from my mom's second marriage.
Okay.
And he's 8 years younger than me, so we've always had a different relationship. I've always been like another mom to him.
Yeah.
And we've never been peers, so we never had like, you know, any sort of rivalry. Mm-hmm. It's a more simple relationship. I'm really proud of him. He just graduated from Wharton, and he just got married last year, and he has a baby on the way, and he just adopted his wife's son.
Wow. He's really doing it.
He's doing it. He's a good Mormon, so mm-hmm. he's really Mormon, and they got married in the temple, but he's a good one.
Are you allowed to go in the temple?
No, so I couldn't see him get married.
So you
couldn't
go to the wedding?
Right.
Okay, because what is the rule? You have to be Mormon to go in the temple?
No, so not all...
You have to be, like, vetted or something?
Yes, so not all Mormons can go in the temple. So there are churches and there are temples. Anyone can go in the church, but temples are for, I guess, a certain standard of Mormons, and you have to get a little card that's called... It's an actual card you can carry in your wallet called a temple recommend. And I don't know if they still do it this way, but they did when I was younger. You have to go and through a series of interviews with your bishop, which is like a preacher or a priest, mm-hmm. and do interviews and pass the test. Like, are you righteous enough to get this temple recommend? And meaning, are you paying your tithing? Are you
How much
chaste?
Tithing do they want?
10%. 10%. Are you chaste? Like, are you, like, honest in your business dealings? Everyone lies about that. like, all of the sort of tenets of, do you drink iced tea? Do you drink, you know, coffee? Like, all these things. They investigate you, and then they approve you, and then you can go to the temple. So, and you have to go to the temple to get married, I think, in order to get sealed. This is a real interesting part of Mormonism that is, like, so easy to crack apart, is so you can get sealed to your spouse for eternity, meaning mm-hmm. when you die, your souls will be together no matter what if you get sealed.
Okay.
So you guys won't get
witchcraft.
Like, you won't get, like, lost in the afterlife. Like, yeah. I won't be like, oh, where's Julius? I can't see him with all these stars in my eyes. You know? Like, if Julius
They're
and I...
They're just waiting
yes,
for you.
Julius is my
Whether
head.
They like
husband.
It or not, because yes. you've been sealed.
Yeah, if I've been sealed, it's like, oh, where's Julie? There he is. There
Can
he is.
Can you unseal?
So this is where it all gets really hairy, because, like, marriage and love and all these things are not a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was very young, I was a product of divorce. So I was another reason I didn't like Mormons. I was always treated like an outsider in the Mormon church, like the dirty kid in the back, right?
Okay. Because like they, it's like a yeah. true, it's yeah. no divorce.
It's different now than when I was a kid, mm-hmm. but like I wasn't able to play with other kids if the, because their families didn't like my brother and I because we were, my mom was single.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that definitely.
They didn't want to catch that divorce bug
yeah,
going around.
Exactly. But like, so I asked them once, like, I remember very specifically asking my Sunday school teacher about sealings. I was like, because you get sealed as a family too. So you get sealed to your children when you have them. And I was like, oh, so like I can get sealed to my parents. And because they're divorced, guess what? The kids have to choose which parent they want to get sealed to because
no.
they can't have both. So as a child...
All right, that's where it's like the whole
yes,
thing falls
apart. Apart, right? Yes.
So were your parents sealed?
No, they oh. didn't get married in the temple.
So you only can get sealed if you're married in the temple.
So
it's a lot of rules.
It's a lot of rules.
It's like a Soho house.
And none of them try.
Membership.
No, it's true. The like.
No, it's more like this like San Vicente bungalows.
Yes. Bungalows. No, it's true.
That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Google it.
It's my friend was talking about this. It's a workspace, right?
It's like. Yeah, it is just a workspace, but it's also supposed to be like, it's like the chicest.
Oh, really?
Like, so it's like the new chic members only kind of like club.
Oh, okay.
But they're so intense about membership. Like,
oh my God.
They put a sticker on both of your phone cameras when you go in. You have to sign an agreement that says like you won't talk about it or like talk about anyone that you saw there or
oh my
like,
God.
And I went there for dinner with a friend mm-hmm. who has a membership.
Chic.
And it was chic.
Yeah.
But they're also like I feel like they will get their revenge.
Yeah.
If I say anything.
Wow, like you guys lock it up, Laura.
I know, I'm scared
lock
now.
It up. Oh my God. They put stickers they put, over
they have
your
really
cameras?
Cute like branded stickers, so it says in their like logo Sam and Sunday Bungalows that they make especially for your phone cameras that are sized the exact size to like fit right on your iPhone.
How much is something like that?
I think their membership is pretty expensive. Wow. I feel like it's like $4,000 to $5,000 a year. I just don't understand, like, I mean, right. I do understand co-working spaces, but I'm like, I love silence and I love no one else around when I'm working.
I just signed up for The Wing because I can't, like, I used to always work in my apartment, which I loved because my older daughter is in preschool, so she's in school all day and I can work.
Yeah.
But my one-year-old is one, and so she's just so loud. And
you can't put her in a crate.
No, you can't put her in a crate upstairs. So I was like, okay, I need to get a workspace. And I just started working out of The Wing like this month, which for the readers who don't know, The Wing is a women's only workspace or a female forward workspace or whatever, because I do see guys there. Like, people will have guests that are guys.
Yeah, I felt betrayed when I saw there,
because I
went as someone's guest and then I was like
I was surprised.
But I guess you can't have, like, legally you can't be like,
no, I mean, why? Like, how many fucking men's only
clubs? I love
that now
we're getting, like, legal about it when men's only clubs have existed for centuries.
Yeah, I know. I did have one male guest. He is gay, and he was very femme presenting that day because we talked about it. And so he wore his coral jacket as, you know, just to like
a nod to the community.
Yes.
I honor
and
you.
And so it's like in that situation, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But when I just see like a bro walking, which is very rare, but I saw one last week, like walking through and like getting coffee when I was getting coffee. And I was just like,
I was like, sit down.
Yeah. What are you?
Who do you think you are?
Yeah. What are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Drinking my free coffee.
Yeah, I found I like The Wing. I found it to be really distracting. Like, I didn't. Right. I wrote like 3 lines of dialogue for the project I was working on, and then I just like stared at every woman's outfit. And
accessories. It's great for fashion watching.
Yeah, because it's all
everyone's
like
so
a pretty diverse,
very diverse
membership base, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Because you can see like all different styles and outfits.
No, it's great for that. I have found one of my friends got rejected, so I know that they like
they're intense. They would not let me go, and I went one day because I was in the area with like my friend Tierney, friend of the pod, and we were like, let's go to The Wing and see if we can like just buy like a day pass or like get a tour. And they were like, no, on both counts. They were like, you can look over and see whatever you can see from this vantage point, like, you have to apply and get accepted to get a tour.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, well, then I'm never fucking applying.
Wow. Here. Yeah. It's affordable.
Yeah.
So it's only $219 a month for unlimited use, and they're open on the weekends.
That's cheap.
So it's affordable for the working woman. In the West Hollywood location, they have a Little Wing, which is childcare.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't work for most kids, I don't think. Like, my kids, anyways. You can't just like drop them off with a stranger and they'll be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really an option for me. I know I can't just like bring my baby and drop her off with someone she's never met while I go have a meeting.
Yeah.
So childcare doesn't really work that way, even though I really, really appreciate that they're doing that and that they're so, you know, cognizant of like a working mom. They have like a pump area in the bathroom that's really nice, and like a baby bouncer that you can put your baby in while you're like, you know, washing your hands or going to the bathroom or whatever. And they have high chairs, and I really appreciate that because I feel like so much of like women's culture, like, you know, like pro woman, like culture or whatever, often, and it's changing, but often forgets about like the moms and how much different our experiences and how much different our needs are. So I really appreciate it. But yeah, I can't drop my kids off there.
Yeah.
They'd scream. Yeah, imagine going to like a chic brunch at The Wing and everyone's so cute and you just hear like
a kid. You hear a kid.
Mama!
a Poulton offspring screaming their head off.
Yeah. Lizetta would lose her shit.
I love that you went from like wild child to married, and not just like married. Like, you have a marriage that I very much, I'm like, this is goals to me, because it's like, not to be that bitch, but it's like a partnership.
It is, yeah.
And you guys have been together for 10 plus years.
If I talk about how much I love Julius, I will cry.
And you both are like, bring equal hotness to the table. So he's, it's so just cute. Like a hot couple with like two gorgeous babies that are genuinely love each other, yeah. And like, aww. Are ride or die, like help each other.
Yes, which we I are don't, ride or die.
I do not, like, I can't off the top of my head think of another couple that yeah. is that same way. That I know personally.
Yeah, no, we're really lucky. I met Julius when I was 20. So he was 21. We met each other. We have very similar lives. We met each other at the sort of right time in our lives. He was also trying to like be a, you know, normal person, and he was also enrolled in like community college and was really trying to move past his like hard partying friends and his unstable home life, and was trying, he was, when I met him, was a paramedic firefighter, and he was working to get his degree.
Sexy.
Yeah, so hot. Or he was an EMT firefighter, and he was working to get a credential so he could become a paramedic firefighter. And so he was already on like a responsible, like renewed path. Mm-hmm. And as was I was completely straight and had straight A's, and I was like on my debate team and like student body president, and was just like trying to transfer to a university. And so we met at the same time where we were both trying to build and both trying to like get away from our past and create a life outside our families, and our families are in different places now than they were when we were 20, but we couldn't rely on them. We didn't have parents that could help us. They were all busy trying to survive, mm-hmm. and to take care of themselves. And his mom was successful at the time, but she was coming out of a horrific divorce. And, you know, it was just, we were left to our own devices, and we were trying to do the best we could. And that's when we met. And so we just continued building together. And he had been set to move back to Hawaii. He had been living in Hawaii. But when he met me, of course, he couldn't go back to Hawaii, because mm-hmm. I'm so great. And so
better than Hawaii. Better you than heard it here first.
I'm better than Hawaii. definitely not more soothing, but maybe more rewarding. Mm-hmm. and then I got into Berkeley, and so he applied to San Francisco State so he could go with me.
Yeah.
So we moved up to Northern California, and we got an apartment together, and all we did was hang out with each other and study. And then we both graduated, and we actually got married when we were still going to school. So we got married when I was 22. And we just have kept building together and growing our lives together. And we've just been really fortunate that we've never grown apart. He can never leave me. He knows that now.
I've like, locked it down at this point.
Yeah, no, when we got married, I was like 22, almost 23. And I was just like, he's my best friend. How can I say no? But if it doesn't work out, I'll just get divorced. No big deal. No harm, no foul. Because everyone in my life was divorced. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a successful marriage. So to me,
that feels like a normal thing. Like at this day and age, it's like, don't marry anyone that you wouldn't get divorced from. Like,
and I was just like, it's not permanent. It's not forever. Yeah. Like if it doesn't work out, I'll get divorced. Mm-hmm. And so I like got married. But now falling into like deeper love and really building a life and sharing life and experiencing something together that, you know, is so much more profound than my dumb 22-year-old head could have ever like conjured up. we're never getting divorced.
Yeah.
He's never leaving me.
You guys are sealed.
The only way he's leaving me is like, I mean, truly, like, it will take like bleach and some garbage bags.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be dark.
Mm-hmm. You're in control of when he's leaving.
Yeah. No, it's forever.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Let's do reader mail.
Oh, I love reader mail. Okay.
Conservative vacation hell. Hi, Lara and lovely guest. First of all, thank you so much for all the amazing content you've brought into the universe. I love all your pods and they become a religious part of my weekly routine. Now to the babe part of this email. My absentee dad and I have recently began to rekindle our relationship and talk about some of the very much ignored issues of the past. This has been painful, but also cathartic. My dad told me he was going to Georgia to visit his side of the family next month, a whole lot of babes, and he suggested that my sister and I come, considering we haven't seen any of them since we were little. I'm 23 now. I remember some negative things about this side of the family from when I was younger, and I've heard some wild stories from my mom, including alcohol, abuse, arrests, drug problems, and some other things too dark to mention. All these problems have also afflicted my dad and are part of why he wasn't around physically or emotionally for a long time. The idea of spending almost a week with these unhinged people is very daunting to me, but I also don't want to regret never seeing them, as some of them are growing older. I added a handful of them on Facebook a couple years back, and not to much of a surprise, they're wildly conservative and love Trump. They're also very religious and love to ask you when you've last gone to church. I really want to go on this trip with my dad because I think it would be good for our relationship, but I don't want to compromise my own mental health. We luckily aren't staying with them and will only see them during the day. The problem is I don't know how to compartmentalize things that bother me. How should I approach answering questions about politics or religion if they come up? Is it okay to walk away from my own sanity? How do I keep those around me from stealing my energy? Thank you so much for all you do. Love and light. This is a good question.
Oof. That this one is good hits for so you close too. I mean, both of us. When you go home,
yeah.
So I recently reconciled with my own dad.
Mm-hmm. Was he visiting you guys recently?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Love that.
And so I really understand how loaded that walk back to each other can be. You know, and I don't know what happened between your reader and their father. So it could be different than my own, but I love my dad, you know, even though, we hadn't been in each other's lives for a long time for, you know, a lot of reasons.
Were you guys like not speaking mm-hmm, for a long time?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We've gone through it before where we went like, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 years without speaking, and then we reconciled and it went bad again. And
yeah.
this last time, it was, let's see, my daughter's 4. So 3.5, 4 years before we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And we reconciled because of my uncle's death. So it's a shame that, you know, it took something so sad and terrible to bring us back together. But, you know, I guess the silver lining is that sometimes you can rise above, you know, I guess pride and bitterness, mm-hmm. you know, when you go through something painful. But it's really complicated. It's really complicated getting to know somebody again. And especially when you know, like, the minefields that are around, the emotional minefields and what pulled you apart to begin with, and all the reasons her dad wasn't in her, I always assume it's a woman. I don't know.
It is. Yeah.
Okay. The reasons her dad wasn't in her life. So it's like navigating that, but then also seeing them through like adult eyes and having empathy for, you know, how hard life can be and see them for the person they are, you know, now in front of you. And so it's always, even in the best circumstances, you're negotiating the past and the present, and it takes a lot of energy,
mm-hmm.
and at least it does for me. And any unexpected thing can be like a trigger or can allude to, you know, a past fight or a past incident. And so, and you have to consciously reorient yourself all the time and be like, nope, I'm not going to walk down there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep talking about, you know, whatever bullshit your dad just said, you know, it's like he doesn't know he just triggered you and reminded you of something terrible, you know, and so you're always like making a choice to stay in the present and not walk back. But when you compound that by stepping into an entire family, that sort of represents all of those challenges or triggers or you know, whatever words you want to use, the hard shit. I don't know, man. I think that if you're that scared and that hesitant, I would really consider like why you're going on this trip, and if it's for your dad, does he really need you to be there? Does he really need you to be a part of his family and to see you with them on the day to day? Like, maybe he doesn't, you know, because I think that getting to know your dad again is such a doozy to bring in. Like, for example, my father and I have only been talking since my uncle's funeral. So last October, mm-hmm. would never go and see all of his like siblings and go on a trip right now. I'm not ready for that.
Yeah.
Because what's important to me right now is my relationship with my dad, because mm-hmm. I do love him and I do want him in my life. So like, I'm not going to explode what I'm already treading carefully on.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't know her relationship, but I think it's totally okay not to go. But if it's something you feel like you actually want to do for the reasons you mentioned, because they're getting older, then you need to go into it knowing they're going to say things you don't agree with, that bother you, and that there's no way you can change them. And I would just take myself out of those scenarios. If they started talking about Trump or whatever, I would put my earbuds in and listen to a podcast, babe.
yeah,
and take
that's
a walk.
Always an option.
And take a walk, you know, because for all the reasons you want to go or all the reasons it's pointless to sit there and try to change their minds or reorient their politics, it just sucks energy from you and will just create conflict. So if you're going because you want to see them before they die, or you're going because it's important to your dad for you to know his family, then you can't engage with, you know, your differences, your different worldviews.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
Yeah. It can be so enticing to fight. Like, yeah. I'm very easily baited, or in the past, I think I'm not as much anymore, because I've really had to like come to terms with being like, go through a fight with like my mom, right, or an argument, or with my brother. And it's like, nothing good ever comes of it. Mm-hmm. It's not like I win them over to my side and they see my point of view. It's just like frustrating. And then I feel like shame and guilt for being like a bad daughter or sister.
And then all the things that are hard for you being in your family, like any shame and guilt that you had to deal with growing up or whatever, it's all brought up in those moments too. You're like, oh, I feel so dismissed. I feel mm-hmm. so whatever your hangups are with that family, like with my own family, it's like, I don't want to be like, I don't want to be shut down. I don't want to be dismissed. I don't want to be invisible, because those are the things I was growing up. So it's like, I'm not going to put myself in a situation to like, to be triggered in that way.
Yeah.
It's just all so pointless. And instead try, I think, in those moments to see the good in people and the reason you chose to go. And I think despite, I mean, my dad, I don't think is a Trump supporter, but Trump was brought up when he came to visit us, last month. And he definitely has different views than I do. But in those moments, like I try to like look at my dad for who he is and like the culture that he lives in. And I'm like, I know that he's not, you know, a bad guy. I know that he's not even a small minded guy. And I am not going to like hold him to my standards because he doesn't have, I guess, the world experience that I have. And I appreciate what he has to offer. Like, he came to my house to build a play space for my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, and my dad can do that. My dad can build a fence and build a playhouse and all those things. And it's because of the culture he was brought up in. And so I can appreciate the good things that he brings to the table and not judge him for the things that are hard to swallow.
Yeah.
I guess just like, I don't know. It's sometimes mental gymnastics, but if you're choosing to go, go with the intention of not engaging with stuff that's futile and destructive for you.
Yeah. Well put. And just don't take the bait.
Yeah. Don't. You just like literally.
And it feels good in that moment when you are cognizant of like that you're, because I have family members that will try and initiate like fights or arguments with me and like try and just push me.
And they're just like,
and it's like
provoking you.
Oh, completely provoked. Like one of my brothers and I like really have a hard time getting along, and he will argue about, it's like he'll argue for the sake of arguing, or tell me that I'm like lying about something I'm not lying about, or like argue about like just a fact or like something.
Just like gaslighting you all the time.
Yeah. And just like kind of like pushing or waiting, like trying to get me to like say something bitchy so that then it can like escalate and take it to the next level. And I noticed this happening the last time that we were all together, which was like over Thanksgiving, like my entire family. It was at your meter.
Yeah, it's okay.
My entire family was together, and I was really nervous because I know that he's just like, he and I can fight and he can get really volatile. And in that moment, I was like, I just decided like I wasn't going to argue with him. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, totally. You're right. And like dropped it. And then it was just like over after that. Like,
you're not giving him what he wants.
Yeah.
So you win anyways.
Yeah. It's like, or not unlike like training a dog or a puppy where you're just like, just drop it and then they'll move on to something else.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, distract them.
Kids are like that too. Don't put energy on it.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Laura. I just listened to this week's bonus episode and your conversation about naked families had me lolling at my desk. I didn't grow up in a naked family per se, but I did grow up in a family that was very open about nudity and sexuality. I was super embarrassed about nudity and sex as a child slash teen, even though I was so curious about it in private. My dad called me Prudence, as in I was so prude, and tried everything he could to make me more open to it. Whenever we would watch a movie with nude... Whenever we would watch a movie with nudity or sex scenes, he would try and get me to watch and talk about it with him. I realize he sounds like a total babe in this description, but it was chill. Eventually, I got more and more open to it, and now I have no issues with being naked or having sex or anything like that. My husband came from a very religious household that did not have this attitude, and he still has hangups about it. He will not be naked for 1 second longer than he has to be and immediately gets dressed again after sex. So basically, I'm saying that your kids can benefit from being raised in a semi-naked family. Thanks for all the lols. Your podcast empire makes life better. Love and light.
I love this email because it's actually a conversation in our home right now, because our older daughter is 4.5 now. And I'm like, oh, okay, like when do we stop being naked in front of her? And I don't know the answer because it really depends which like parenting hole you fall in online. Yeah. And what's healthy, what's not healthy.
Everyone has a different opinion.
Yeah, everyone has a different opinion. And I don't know. And I'm like, okay, like when, especially with my husband, because he's a guy and they're girls, like what's okay, what's not okay in terms of like his nudity and then eventually my nudity, or maybe not, like, I don't know. I grew up like super, like I never saw naked bodies.
Yeah.
And I think that definitely affected me. And now I'm on the other side of it. And thanks, Kate. K-spas. I really think that that will get rid of your like body self-consciousness. Just go to some K-spas and just like walk around naked.
Get into a room with tons of other naked women with all different body types.
It takes all the fear away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't grow up in a naked household at all. Like, I mean, I think I said this on the bonus app, but like, I think I saw my mom's boobs once and like my dad's dick once when I was little.
I accidentally walked in my dad getting dressed once when I was like in middle school, and it was like there was his penis, and I still remember feeling so like ashamed that, and I felt ashamed because like I walked in on him and I was like, I'm so sorry. And I was mortified.
Yeah. Like I walked in on him like showering or something by accident, and it's just like, ugh! And then you're like, mm. But like, And even my mom always treated any sort of nudity, like she equated it with pornography, like even if it's not pornography. So I think that gave me like a complex about it for a while.
Yeah.
But now I'm a little more comfortable with like nudity.
I'm so comfortable now.
Yeah.
And it is because one of my friends, I don't know if you know Annalisa, she made me go to a K spot and I was like, what do you mean? Just like walk around naked in front of everyone? And she's like, yeah, it's a spa. But that was so foreign to me that it felt like insane, like an insane thing to do.
Yeah.
And now I go all the time and I feel so comfortable. And then once you have kids, you like disassociate from your body, like because your boobs aren't your breasts anymore. They're just like milk bags.
You're just like a feeding machine.
Yeah. And so that helps too. But by and large, I don't feel embarrassed or self-conscious when I'm naked in front of people now at all.
Yeah. I think I need to go have like another immersive like K-spa experience. Well,
I have some Burke Williams spa passes. I'd be so happy to bring you to Burke Williams.
Love. I'm fully
if you want
in.
Chic naked.
Yeah, because like it doesn't really, I'm like chic naked or just like random naked doesn't really matter. But I think after like being alone for so long and like living and working out of my apartment, it's really easy for me to just like the only naked bodies are bodies that I would see online.
Right.
And so that's like unhealthy long term.
No.
Because I'm in a place of like very like getting nitpicky about body things.
Mm-hmm.
And also passing 35, it's like I feel like aging is fully like happening faster than ever
for sure,
and then I'm just like it's all falling apart like blah blah blah, so I need like just like IRL nudity to contextualize my journey.
I get naked at the spa probably twice a month. Love it makes me so happy, not just being naked but the whole spa process of like soaking and like talking with your girlfriend or girlfriends, whoever comes, for, you know, a couple hours, and like going to the sauna and the steam room, and just like it's so nice because like you don't feel self-conscious at all.
Yeah.
At all. You're just there.
You're having like relaxing self-care with a lot of different people.
Yeah, I love it. And you see, depending on which spa you go to, Olympic spa on Olympic, you see more like diverse women there, which is cool because you see a lot of different body types, a lot of different, you know, like tattoos and, you know, bush styles, which I know we're not supposed to like look, but I'm always interested in the latest trends.
Yeah. What's going on with bush styles right now?
I know. I think right now we're like to like a 70s bush. I think that that's chic. I saw this model that I follow, but she's like kind of an influence. She's also a photographer. She's like an arty model that I follow on Instagram, and I saw her at the spa a couple months ago. And
that's thrilling.
Yeah, and she's like full bush, and I was just like, oh well, because she's super cool. I was like, okay, like it's full bush time.
Yeah.
I can't go totally full bush. I have to like clean up the sides, but I think it's hot. Like and also I like that on a guy too. Like I always tell Julius I hate club dick. Club dick is like shaved.
Oh,
like
no.
I hate it.
No,
it's
shave.
Like so gross.
No shave. So I'm just groom
like clean it
thoughtfully
up
thoughtfully groom.
Clean it up, but I like body hair.
Yeah
And I think that it's on its way back. According to,
sorry to all y'all who got all your shit lasered off.
That's a real conversation though, because I went with one of my girlfriends who's very cool and very like on trend, and she's completely lasered off, and she was like, sometimes I regret it. And I was like,
I never went like full, because I got laser, but it starts to grow back after a while.
Oh,
but I never
it?
Had gone full bare, because I was just like, that doesn't speak to like my journey or aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like prepubescent. Like, I don't know why that's like attractive.
Like, I understand why you would want it, but I also am just like, for me, it would feel not right.
Yeah.
But I've always been a fan of like model bush, which is just like you have like a little
like
bush
strip
on top. Not a strip, but like just like a little natural bush where it looks like, oh my God, I have a bush, but it's so
like cute.
Tiny.
It's cute.
That is not at all what the case was pre-laser.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm glad that like a 70s comeback. But I did hear if you take Viviscal.
What's that?
It's like a hair growth supplement. That's like, I think one of the most like popular hair growth supplements, that it will make your bush grow back too.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So
you can walk back
tip
from it.
For anyone that's looking to grow a bush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what do parenting...
No, I didn't
say.
Even ask her question. I mean, I didn't even answer her question. Yeah, I don't know what people are supposed to do or not supposed to do. I think either way, we sort of create complexes in our children that they have to work to undo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah. I think that if we created like a naked house, I mean, we're naked right now because our kids are so young, but if we like persisted in this lifestyle and they're like, Mom,
into their teens,
put it away,
please stop getting naked all the time.
Yeah, they'll be having a conversation with their friends and their spouse about how much we fucked them up.
Yeah,
you know, and how, you know, but if we also like keep everything behind closed doors, like, and you know, bought, and they infer that like they should be ashamed of their nakedness, then we fucked him up there too. I think that it's, I don't think there's any way you can win. I think it's just important to be as neutral as possible. I think that her dad went a little hard in the moments, being like, can't
okay,
see.
Pause. Let's have a chat about that.
Yeah, I think it's good not to put a lot of energy on it one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And to allow space for conversation, but to not force the conversation. And I think that goes with almost like any taboo or anything, because we have the same conversation about like alcohol and things, because I grew up, you know, in absolutely no alcohol homes.
Yeah.
And there's such a taboo with alcohol in Mormon culture. So a lot of like Mormon teens start binge drinking, you know, and I had a friend who was a Jehovah's Witness, same thing, but like friends of mine that like grew up in more European homes, like their parents like were you know, French or whatever, it's like when they were 14 they were allowed to have a small glass of wine with dinner, and they always used responsibly.
Yeah,
because there wasn't energy on it, there wasn't a taboo, it wasn't forbidden. So I don't know, I think that can go with nudity too, just don't put too much energy on it.
Now I have an email from someone who grew up in a naked family. A true naked
family. A true naked family?
Hi, Queen. I'm from a naked family. My mom was a big nudie Rudy for our whole childhood. Not in a weird, creepy way. More in like a, it's just skin and everyone has nipples, so who cares way. My dad would sit on the toilet nude with the door open, which is exactly as gross as it sounds. That sounds like a classic dad thing. And if we needed something and he was in the shower, he would just walk in and... we would just walk in and get it. And if we saw a wang, then we saw a wang, and it was no big deal, but that was kind of it. He didn't necessarily ever walk around nude, but he would be shirtless regularly. My mom would be nude pretty often. Like, she was more like clothing is a social confine, and if I want to be topless in my house, then I will, and it won't be weird, because why should it? She would sleep nude, and if we came in for a cuddle in the morning as kids, she'd welcome us into the bed and not be embarrassed or care that she was nude. And I guess neither did we. She would often sunbake totally nude on our veranda until people started complaining. So instead of putting swimmers on, she just put sheets on the railing so no one could see in. She was fucking legendary. Anyways, I guess it rubbed off on me because now I'm the friend in the group who everyone has seen totally naked, and I don't give a shit. I pee with the door open. I prefer to be topless, sleep naked, and naked under a robe is truly life. Agree with that. I go to nudist beaches to tan, mostly because I hate tan lines, but partly because it's very freeing and it's such a vibe and reminds me of my mom. I had a daughter almost 2 years ago, and I bathed with her like once a week, and she sees me naked if I'm like getting changed or laying out in the backyard tanning topless, and it's no biggie. My husband comes from a fully clothed at all times house, and he still closes the door when he showers, even if it's just he and I in the house. It's bizarre to me, but my behavior is probably weird to him, so big shrug, I guess. I continue to be who I am around my kid unless a time comes that she becomes embarrassed or uncomfortable. But if I honestly don't see that happening, because I want to teach her that body is just body and she shouldn't be ashamed of it. Love and light and bare skin.
Yeah, ditto. I like that reader's perspective, and her parents seem to start that, and that's awesome.
Yeah. I love it. let's get into the bonus episode.
Oh,
we're gonna call it quits here. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
It was so fun. I was so scared. I just wanted to live up to your
you did
your
great.
Very high standards.
You did amazing.
Okay, great, cool.
Tell all the readers where they can find you.
Right. I am on Instagram at _BrittPoulton. It's BrittPoulton. And that's it. I have a Twitter account, but I've never tweeted. So that's it.
You're going to have to find her on Instagram. And then if anyone is in LA on August 2nd, I'm going to be moderating a Q&A after a screening of Them That Follow.
Yes, it's at the Landmark on Pico. And Lara's going to be amazing. And we're so grateful that she's bringing her big moderating energy.
I'm so excited to like moderate. I really hope I don't shank the moderator thing, because I think that they are some of the biggest babes out there.
Moderators are the biggest babes.
Yeah, they're always like asking the dumbest questions. Yeah. So I'm like trying to come up with like great questions. Yeah. So come see the movie and then see if I make a good moderator or not.
Landmark.
And then maybe you can ask a question. Are you doing like an open Q&A?
I think so, yeah.
That's a great place to get the babes coming out of the mix.
Yeah,
too.
No, I assume so. So please do come, even if you don't want to see my movie, if you're just a fan of Lara, because she will take the stage.
Buy a ticket to the movie. If you live in other cities, go see it too. Mm-hmm. It's a real thrill ride.
Yeah, you saw a director's cut.
I saw
a
director's
cut.
You were one of the few. Yeah, and I knew kind of what it was about, mm-hmm. but I didn't really know. And I just went in with no expectations. Mm-hmm. And then after the movie, I was like, whoa, Britt and Dan are fucked up. And I love that about them.
Great.
So if that doesn't make you want to see it, I don't know it will. And if you want to get into, if you want to get weekly bonus episodes, you can join Patreon for $5 a month, patreon.com/babepodcast. Mm-hmm. You get weekly bonus content. So
do it.
We're going to do that now. And love and light. Babe?
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com code program.